So like I said, the reason that I chose these three topics in particular to focus on this time, because last time we did more of a general overview of leadership issues. We had a presentation about dealing with difficult people, and we had covered a number of topics relating to responsibilities for officers and so forth during our last session last year. But there are three areas that I think are particularly key for really pushing your organization forward. The first one is projects, the second one is fundraising, and the third one is membership. So I want to ask first, why do you think, of all the things we could talk about, why do you think I chose those three? Any guesses? Areas of improvement? Mm-hmm. Takes all three to make a successful unit. Any other ideas? Giving focus. Mm-hmm. So we have some topics that are general. They're not just specific to one chapter, but it's kind of general for everybody. Excellent. I like that. If you do get out and do projects in the community, people see us as being more independent and capable. That is great. Projects bring members together with a common goal. That is wonderful. Yeah, that's true. You meet people too. And now that you guys have given all this information, I can go home, right? No. You see, wonderful benefits from projects. You know, I'm going to tell you a little story about my church without being in a denomination. But there was a leader in my church who was speaking a few years ago about the importance of, you know, growing a church and encouraging members to stay in the church. And he said every church member at this church needed, and I'm going to use more generic terms than he used, but everyone needs a friend, a job, and learn something. You know, we like to hang out with our friends, right? And we don't want to go to places where we don't have any friends, right? But if you have a friend, sometimes you'll go to a place for no other reason than to hang out with your friends, right? You know, you'll go to a movie you don't really care about that much, but because your friends are going, you go, oh, what the heck, I'll just hang out with my friends, joke around, eat popcorn, even if the movie stinks, I don't care, right? Yeah. Well, it's that way in any organization. If you've got good friends in the organization, that may hold you and nothing else will. And what about if you have a job? I think anybody who has been employed for any amount of time knows that there are many days when you get up in the morning and you would be perfectly happy sleeping until noon. Am I right? And you get that Saturday morning coming around and it's raining, it's icky weather, you feel kind of crummy and you stayed up too late the night before, and you're thinking, do I really want to go to that chapter meeting this morning? But what if you're the coffee coordinator? And what happens if you don't show up? Not good. So you get up anyway. And when you have a job, it gives you a reason to stay involved. You know, they need you to be there. And so you can't just skip out because they'll know if you're not there. And then what about learning? You know, we like want to be able to take something away from our experience, right? I mean, a lot of us here, I think, are probably motivated to be volunteers. You know, we probably wouldn't be spending all of our hard-earned money to come to these conferences if we weren't kind of outwardly focused people who like to contribute. But we want to get something out of what we do when we come to a meeting. Like, if we go to a meeting, we want to be able to learn something. We want to be able to take something away that's useful to us. So it's great to have something to learn. So where does a project fit into that? Well, projects, like it's been already said, people make friends when they're involved in projects. People, when they're in a project, they have a job to do. You know, somebody's got to be, you know, working on the flyers to promote the project, whatever it is. Maybe somebody's got to help with fundraising. Somebody's maybe if you're doing an event, somebody has to worry about getting the hall or getting the food or getting supplies or lining up volunteers or whatever. So lots of people in the group get involved in a project, have jobs to do. And then, of course, when you're in a project, you learn a lot. You know, let's say if you're doing something that in a project, you've never done that before, you learn a lot of stuff. You know, like let's say that you were having a project. Well, I'll tell you about the project that we have in our chapter, and I'll show you how that applies. And I'm in the San Francisco chapter, and for over 10 years now, we've had this project. It's gone through different names, but we now call it the Student Education Access Grant. And it's the way it works is that every year, late in the fall, we send out applications to students, to young people, to schools, to wherever we can think to send them so that they get into the hands of kids and their teachers, encouraging them to sign up and apply to get a technology grant valued at up to $2,500. And they do an application. We receive the applications back. We select the three best applicants. We interview them, and then the best one is awarded the grant, and we arrange to get the technology they've asked for. And then in September, we did this just a couple weeks ago, we do our annual award lunch. We bring them in usually with their family and their VI teacher, and we have a lunch, and we give them a certificate, and we get them to introduce themselves to us. And it's really a great experience to be involved with this. And then the rest of the year, we raise money like crazy. So we can, but it's a focus for us. You know, we're not just going to meetings. We're not just socializing. We have a place in our community. And we have a purpose. And that pulls us together and gives us a greater meaning. Does anybody here have either currently or maybe in the past, been involved with a chapter project that you kind of felt really was important to you, that really, you know, had an impact on you and on your chapter? Does anybody have any thoughts about that, things that they might have had happen in the past or presently? I know of a few. Who's that? Who's calling? Is that William? Okay, William, tell us about your experience with a project.
Recently we had in Fresno we had our Dining in the Dark meal, and early on I was asked to be one of the speakers, so I really enjoyed, you know, creating ideas for a speech, sifting out what would work, editing it down to keep it within about 10 minutes. And so, but I felt really involved, and I felt as though I had to go there to just show what good the CCB chapter in Fresno had done for me as an individual and what could be put out to other people. And Sarah was one of the main organizers of that with a committee. And several other members of the chapter, including my wife Darcy, were also on the committee to raise the awareness of that.
And Sarah, as long as you're here, could you give us some sort of background and sort of what went into making that project and how it worked?
I'm Rahi. All right. Okay, am I super loud? Okay, I'm okay. Well, first of all, we did it last year. We did more of a semi-formal event, which was still successful, but, you know, people want to be casual. They want to chill out and wear their jeans, wear t-shirts. So we did it at a local restaurant, and they were more than willing to take on having an event where people were going to be blindfolded and eating. So what we did was we found the place, we got together, we put out a donation letter. We got a whole bunch of silent auction items, and we were able to get enough things to where we raised about $1,400 just on the silent auction alone. We created t-shirts, we had our speakers, but most importantly is we all learned what each other's strengths and weaknesses are, to where when we get ready for next year, we are going to be able to be more and more successful because we have a plan in place, if that makes sense.
Very good.
Well, thank you.
Oh, Margie, you had a question. Go ahead and ask us your question. Go ahead. So how many people did it take to put it together, and how many people are in the chapter overall? And maybe you can expand on that a little by just kind of telling us something about how you planned it, and maybe if you had your committees or how that was organized.
Okay, so first of all, when we started planning, we had 19 members. We're now up to 22. We had a fundraising committee of 7, which included all 4 board members. Each of us had our own piece of the pie, so to speak. I initially went out to the restaurant, myself and the president, you know, talked with them, told them what we wanted to do. And then, you know, we all kind of, you know, looked up where to order the blindfolds. I went all over Fresno getting donations for the silent auction. We had individual members that, although they didn't actively participate in going out and getting things, they did donate items themselves, which was very, very cool. We had new members that walked in and said, hey, I can help, and, you know, brought in huge items as well. Does that answer your question more too? Okay. And everyone sold tickets. So we ended up selling 92 tickets.
Very, very good. I know another project that is worth talking about. Susan Glass.
She stepped out.
Oh, she stepped out. Okay.
Paul, oh,
very good. Here you go, Margie. Yeah. There you go.
All right. So one of the things that we worked on was getting audio description for a music circus, I believe, what it was?
And Broadway.
Oh, Broadway. And traveling Broadway, yeah, off-Broadway. We had, about 5 members that worked on this extensively. You really headed up the project, Margie. I should let you.
So my first love is advocacy, and when I joined the chapter, I saw that when I moved to Northern California, I saw that we needed to do a lot of advocacy. So I tend to try to do one project and complete it. And so we formulated a committee and met with the people from California Musical Theater, and they run both a Broadway series and our summer program, Music Circus. And basically, after about a year, we pushed really hard with them, and the committee met, and then the committee met with them. And after a year, which I think was extremely a short period of time to get something so successful moving, we were successful. And then what we did was that next summer, as a chapter outing, any member that wanted to go to a particular performance, which we selected for the group, the chapter paid half the price for their tickets, and then those that wanted to join us to go to dinner afterwards went to dinner. So we worked on it, and then we celebrated our success, and as a matter of fact, pretty much every summer we attend as a chapter thus far one of the music circus events. The other thing we did is when you get your sample ballot stuff from the counties that you live in, and you know, it could cover county stuff, it can cover your local city stuff, your mayoral stuff. That's information in Sacramento County was not accessible at all, and it isn't in many counties. And again, we put together another small task force, and I think it took us about a year and a half. And now all of our 20-something sample ballots for the county are online in accessible formats. People in our chapter tested sample ballots from previous elections. And now, obviously, the outcome is anybody in our chapter that is interested in really studying the sample ballot for Sacramento County and their particular region within the county can do that. Thank you.
And I want to make some observations that occurred to me as I was hearing folks talk about their projects. And one was that each project was different. You know, there's not one best project. And I think each project was an outgrowth of the character of the chapter. You know, some chapters are really into advocacy. Some chapters are more into social things. Some chapters are more into maybe helping individuals. Each chapter has a different feel to it, and I think that the project can reflect the culture of your chapter. There's not one best project. I think the best project is one that gets as many people as possible involved and that draws on their particular strengths and their particular outlook. And the other thing is, I think, is that ideally it's a project that reaches out beyond your group to help others. Yes. Who's that over there? Is that Pam? No, who's that? Who is that over there? It is Pam. Pam Metz, yes. I think The Weeknd is playing a toll on your vocal cords here. Yes.
One of the things that we, this is one of the things that I decided this year that Greater LA would do is a toy drive. We are very much in the middle of LA City. We have a lot of homeless kids, and I'm not concerned about more so the adults, but the kids. When a kid doesn't have something for Christmas, that's very sad. But the other thing was to get not only Greater LA and out into the public, but to get CCB in our area out into the public. So what we're going to do is I'm collecting toys. I don't know if I'm going to give up the Hot Wheels yet, but I'm collecting toys from each chapter member. And eventually, I'm going to try to pull every chapter in the LA area into this. And I'm taking them to the Sparkle Love Drive in my area and dropping them off. And this way, not only are we out in the public, I'll take about four or five of my members, but we'll be on TV. And this gets CCB on TV. And this gets CCB on TV in our local area, like KABC or ABC News or something like that. So this is a project that I have been thinking about for the last year and finally decided to implement. Because our chapter is growing and we're getting more members who really want to work.
That's neat. So now we're going to do something kind of fun. At each of your tables, put your heads together, and I'm going to give you about 5 minutes or a little, maybe a little more if you've really got the creative juices going here. I want you guys to invent an idea for a project and sort of figure out, get a sense of how it would work and what would go into making that project work. And I want you to be creative. You can be off the wall, or it can just be an existing project that you're already working on and maybe how to make it grow. Whatever. Do whatever you want with it. This is just have fun with it. And then we'll just, when we're done, we'll have people share what they came up with. And we'll discuss some ideas that leads us to based on that. So are you ready? Let's go. Let's go. Let's buy your table. And again, if there's only one or two of you at a table, you may want to move over to another table so you can get some help there. But so go ahead and explore. There are no wrong answers. It sounds like you're all having good conversations, but if any of you guys are stuck, just call me over and I'll see what I can do to help you keep moving. I'm going to give you about 5 minutes more and then we'll get some reports. How are we all doing? Are we getting ready to wrap up or does anyone need more time? Okay, I'm going to start here at the what I would call the far end here. I think this is the Fresno crew here, Fresno and Company. The Valley people, yes. And do you have a spokesperson who can tell us about the project ideas you've been talking about and what you're looking at? Sarah, where's Sarah Harris? Here you go, Sarah. Tell us about your project ideas.
So we are going to do a haunted house with the option of going through it blindfolded, which means you're going with your sensory, you got your sound, you have texture, and you have ooey-gooey nasty stuff to put your hands in. We came up with an idea of a budget about $3,000. We'd start in January, for this project to pop off in October. You need volunteers, of course, to be sighted guides. You need some volunteers, maybe from a local drama club, to come out and play your characters, maybe a little Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees. And we have committees of, the building design, media, safety, the treasury part, and advertising. She's reading my notes, but I have it all small print over here, so she's probably... She can't even read it? Okay. I don't know. So any questions? Any general... Does it sound good? I think it sounds like fun.
Questions about the haunted house.
Mm-hmm. That's where we got a safety committee. Yep. And... Yeah, that's an awesome question. I think that would be up to the person and their dog. Yeah? What do you think, guys? Yeah. Here, you want to pass it to William?
This wasn't to do with dogs, actually. We also would cater the project as well, so invite in people, and then we would license them to sell food for a share of their profits as well.
All right. Very good. Well, that sounds fun. That sounds fun. That'd be food and scare yourself to death. I like it. Great. Very great project.
Our tickets are going to be $10 children, $5 adult.
$10 children, $5 adult.
And children is anyone under
17
and under.
Yeah. 17 and under. Okay, I'm going to move over to the next table, where I think we have a lot of Sacramento people here and others. Zach, tell us about the plan, dude. Where's that?
Right to your left. So we're going to do a blindness awareness event where we introduce to the families of kids that are just starting to be independent, ages 5 and up, and to the people that are losing their vision, how to be a sighted guide, how to guide someone who is blind. And we're going to have a relay where the person, the guide is blindfolded.
Okay, for the relay races, first we're going to have an O&M instructor show the person who's blind how to walk with the human guide, and they're going to talk with the human guide is going to be shown how to be a human guide. And once we get a little training, we're going to do a relay where the sighted person has to guide the blind person through obstacles. And then they have to turn around and be blindfolded and let themselves be guided by the blind person. And a relay race, so we learn trust, to be trusting and to trust. Now I'm going to turn it back to Zach.
We're going to have a whole bunch of mini stations. We're going to try to get the Partially Sighted Institute to come out, the Braille Institute, the Junior Blind, and a couple other organizations to introduce to the families and the parents of children that there are these resources out there. And we'll even have some of the school districts come out to show what an IEP can entail so that they know that they're going to get the accommodations they need, their child, and that it'll all go through. We will have, in the morning, we'll give out free bagels and stuff, and then we'll have a food truck of some sort come in the afternoon for a little carnival laughter, and we'll have games for the kids. We'll introduce them to the soccer ball with the bell in it, the basketball with the bell in it, and my favorite sport, we're going to introduce them to gold ball, which is not many people know about gold ball. So we really need to get that word out there. It's been around for many years. So
we have one more event.
Oh, marching. Okay. One of the stations we would have that could be geared towards children or adults is we'd put coins in like a bucket of dried corn, and this is to sensitize their ability to touch. They have to find the coins that's in there, and then they have to separate them out and be able to tell us in a period of time what each coin is.
Well, that's great. Blindness Awareness Day. That is just around, it would be around White Cane Day. So White Cane Day is October 15th. And that would be a great project to do, to really open up the community to the awareness. And I'm loving this. And the haunted house one, that would be a great one around Halloween, wouldn't it? Yeah. In October too, yeah. Okay, I'm going over to the next table. Who is the spokesperson at this table? Would that be Pam? You're doing okay, Annalisa.
So we had many great ideas, but the one we thought we would all like, because we really want to get the young people involved, like the last group was sharing, was a like community day, but it'd be themed around in the specific area of the chapter. And it'd be the main part of it that I came up with was a dog wash and like community picnic kind of. So we would have some people like selling the tickets for the dogs, have some people bathing the dogs, have like a bake sale or a barbecue, and just have a real community aspect so we could have people talk to each other and share stories. And, you know, because sometimes we, as blind people or visually impaired people, talk and stuff, and we have lovely guides down here who like to get pampered and stuff.
Yes.
Did you want to add something?
Yeah, and since I'm here, and you know, I'm pretty social and I like people, and I could talk to people. Hey, you know, I don't have a dog, but I remember when I was growing up, or you know, just talking to them about whatever they wanted to talk about, or I wanted to, you know, find some kind of common ground and make people feel at ease and comfortable. And they would learn something about me, and I would learn something about them, and that would be really fun.
The one thing that we really wanted to do was to get out into the community and to get the young ones from the universities or the college. Now, I don't live in Sacramento, but Annalise and these, they do. And so I actually would travel to Sacramento to help organize this. I think it's a good idea to bring, to have Jordan handle getting all the dogs and the buckets and the soaps and the sponges and getting all his volunteers to help with the bathing, and have Annalise, since she's so detailed, handle all the organizational stuff, bringing them in and setting it up and getting donations. And I love to delegate. And have John, he can help advertise, you know. So each of us would have a certain thing we would do, and we're playing on each other's strengths.
Dog wash, I love it. I love it on a lot of levels. It's, you definitely wouldn't think, is a blind chapter going to do a dog wash? No, it's talk about thinking outside the box. I love it. And talk about breaking down stereotypes. And really doing something in the community, and you gotta love dealing with dogs, huh? Very cool. All right, we're gonna go to our other table here. And what kind of a project have you been working on?
Here you are.
Well, we pretty much discussed something that my own chapter has just recently identified, was that we have in our city a dedicated bus lane that goes down the middle of the street. Well, now it's an express bus, so at these particular stops, the signal lights don't have audible signals. And a lot of times there's no parallel traffic that will allow you to know when to cross. And so we kind of decided first that we need to identify what all we need from this this bus line, like where's all the stops and stuff, and do the research first. And then start talking to our city and also possibly bringing out the traffic engineer as a guest speaker, and also start attending city council meetings and get our chapter known to our city council. That's pretty much about it so far. It's a work in progress. So.
That's great. I mean, and this pedestrian safety advocacy awareness, what a wonderful project to be working on. That's such an important part and an important issue for all of us, not just our local blind communities, but pedestrians in general and people in general. And what a great project to be working on. Did any of you have trouble participating in this exercise, or did you all feel pretty comfortable about participating in the exercise? Yes? No? Not too hard? Nancy, do you have a comment? But I noticed that there was a lot of conversation going on. So once you guys got started, I think you all were able to pretty much run with it and get the ideas going and start putting ideas together and really create. Each of you had a different creative idea for a great project idea. And here, none of you had come in ahead of time really knowing very much other than that we were going to talk about projects if you'd looked in the program and saw that it was listed there. But, you know, none of you had any preparation to speak of, yet all of you were able to come in, contribute in a meaningful discussion of a great idea. And I want you to hold that in your minds. And I hope that each of you will go back to your chapters, especially if you're on your chapter board or if you're not on your chapter board, get your chapter board to do this, is do some brainstorming and come up with an idea for a great community project that your chapter can work on. And you've seen today that it's not hard to get that process starting. Sure, any project is going to have a million details. We all know that. But the process of getting started is doable for all of us. And it will reap huge benefits to your chapters that we've already talked about. We've talked about how it brings people together. Gives your chapter a purpose. And one thing I want to point out before we move on is that the chapter project will also give energy to your other chapter functions. You know, for example, if you're fundraising, it's easier to go out and fundraise if you can point to the people you're contacting about fundraising and be able to tell them what you're going to do with their support. You know, like in my chapter, we have our Student Education Access Grant program. That makes it a whole lot easier for us to fundraise because we can say, hey, we're helping kids get access technology. And people say, I like that. I'll give you $20, you know. And if you're, you know, your project, whatever your project is, it's something that people can grab onto. And it's not just help the blind club here. No, it's we've got a project that we want you to be a partner on. And that makes it easier to fundraise when you've got a specific thing you can point to. It also makes it easier for you to get members. When somebody says, what does your chapter do? Why should I join? Oh, well, we do this. You know that you saw that thing in the paper about the dog wash? That was us. Whatever, you know? So it makes, when you have this project, it does all these wonderful benefits. And I think you'll find that by doing the project in your chapter and taking that back to your chapter and making that happen, that'll make so many other things in your chapter easier and more successful. Does anybody want to share any thoughts that they might have about projects that we haven't covered yet before we move on to the next topic?
I just have maybe one comment and maybe
I'm really, really new to being part of an organization like CCB and actually being an active member. And then they made me president. My email address is Lil4Star. And anyone who knows military, I think they know that's the top person and the one who likes to give orders. But we have an older chapter, and I like to bring projects. We talk about how we want to boost and promote our youth, and we talk about how we want to do this, but it's a whole lot of talk. And I don't want to take them kicking and screaming and kicking me out, but I want to help motivate them to move. So any suggestions you can help me with to help kind of give them a little nudge along so we're actually moving and, you know, our feet are doing what our lips are saying.
Wonderful question. Does anybody want to make a suggestion about that? I'm walking over to the table here. And here we go. All right. What? Let's tell us about your ideas on that.
William actually. William. Yeah, he jumped out of first. So
let's where'd you go, William? There you are.
I was just thinking maybe it could be possible for us to have regional groups as well, rather than individual chapters. So, like Fresno, Bakersfield, Merced, the Central Valley, mm-hmm. we could do something that was joint. One of us host and the other two help. People in the Bay Area and in LA and San Diego help each other as well. And maybe we could call on expertise from other chapters outside our own local areas to bring in, and we would offer help to each other that way.
Exactly. Okay, is that Debbie? Okay, I'm coming over, Debbie. And that's a great idea, because and I have to share something about that, is that in the Bay Area, we're working on something right now where we actually are getting groups together, not just CCB, but others as well, where we're looking into partnering with Habitat for Humanity to get a group of blind folks to go out and work on one or two Habitat for Humanity projects. That is, it's going to be the Lighthouse, one or two of the NFBC chapters, and one or two of the CCB chapters, and we're going to try and put this together and do this fall. So, yeah. So you're right, that getting chapters in your region together may be a really great way to take on a project that maybe your individual chapter wouldn't be able to do on its own. That's a wonderful idea. Debbie.
Is not exactly what we're talking about. It's a little bit more grassroots, so I don't know, maybe it isn't appropriate to bring it up, but I will anyway. In our chapter, Glendale Burbank chapter, it's really a good group. I like it. I think it's warm, but basically people go, and it's like a once a month thing. They socialize, a few people volunteer, a few people do all the work. So we're trying to bring it to the next level. And it really started in January. I went to the meeting on the first Saturday of the month, not knowing that the meeting was on the second Saturday of the month that particular month. My email wasn't working. You know, it was just an announcement by email. I wasn't at the Christmas party. That's where the announcement was made. So what that shows us is that there's really, it's not personal. There's no personal, you know, connection. And I was a little irritated, you know, but, you get over it. Okay. So, lack of community, exactly. So, we're doing a couple of things regarding that. We have a phone tree, where even if you have email, a person calls, and that's also, I'm not a secondary member. Greater LA is a secondary member. That's Pam's chapter. Greater LA is my secondary chapter, is what I'm saying. right, I got it out after the fourth time or whatever. But anyway, Pam's group is doing that also, or, you know, the Greater LA. And I think having that contact. Also, another thing that we're doing, we've added two features to our program, I mean our meeting every month. One is if somebody has a little advocacy problem or how do you do this, you know, just a short problem that we can, you know, discuss. People can give their suggestions in 5 or 10 minutes. You know, we do that, and then we have a basic technology thing segment. Like, I brought my my Gusto 3, which is kind of like the Haven, and showed people that, hey, even if everybody can't use an iPhone or doesn't wish to use an iPhone or isn't ready to right now, this is another option. Somebody brought a cheese, a sandwich maker, you know, just little simple technology things to make it a little bit more personal and hopefully engage it and letting people know that, hey, this is your chapter, and I don't think that we can go to the next level until we've reached that sense of community.
Thank you. Thank you, Debbie. And the nice thing is that, and I that yes, we definitely have to work on that community. But in fact, by these projects can actually be part of the vehicle that gets you to that community. You know, there's a psychological theory I've heard about. I think it's called game theory, I think it is. I heard somebody give a speech about this once. And his point was that a lot of times the way we learn is by doing. So a lot of times, if you want to get your chapter to the next level, the way to get there is to start moving to the next level. In other words, rather than waiting until you've got all your ducks lined up in a row before you move up to the next level, start walking, as it were, you know? And so that might mean, even if you don't feel like your chapter is quite ready to do a project yet, start the process. You know, maybe it starts by, you know, you might want to start by getting your officers together in your chapter and start brainstorming about project ideas. And if somebody says, well, we're not big enough to do that yet, we don't have any money, just tell them, don't worry about that yet. We're making the plan now. We'll figure out how later. Let's get the ideas first and get the conversation started. And when you've got the conversation going and you've got the idea where you want to go, it's going to be easier to get there. Absolutely. So I hope you'll share all this with the project. Shall we go on to the next topic? Okay. Who is there anybody in here that doesn't hate asking for money? Good. But most of us hate it. It feels icky. Like, feels like you're standing on the corner with pencils saying, help the blind, help the blind. No, I know. It's hard. Fundraising is uncomfortable. Talk about getting out of your comfort zone. Fundraising definitely takes you way out of your comfort zone. So I want to talk about some ideas I've learned about fundraising, because one of my longer-term professional goals is to kind of move into the fundraising area, in the area of nonprofits. So I've done a bit of reading about that. I've attended a seminar or two, and I've learned a few things I didn't know before that I want to share with the group. And one thing that you hear sometimes at these seminars is they'll talk about friend-raising. Ew, a buzzword. Friend-raising. Ew. But there's actually a point to it, is that, you know, most of us don't want to just be hit up, right? You know, you're walking down the street and somebody says, Mister, can you give me $5 so I can buy my lunch? Yeah, right? You know what I mean? But on the other hand, what if a friend of yours says, you know, I'm working on this great project. I'm going to be flying down to Peru next month with a group of my people from my club or my Lions Club, and we're going to be, you know, building a school for the kids in Peru or something. And he says, will you kick in $50 to help us do that? Heck yeah, right? Why? Why is it that some guy on the street corner asking you for a couple bucks turns you off? But if your friend has a project and it's a cool project and it's going to be meaningful, you're like, great, that's neat. Let me get out my checkbook. Why? I think that it's because, first off, you see value in it. You see that it's going to go somewhere. You know, you don't feel like you're just throwing your money down a rat hole, right? The other reason, I think, is that you feel like you're going to be part of it. And even if you're not going yourself, you really feel like, you know, that $50 that you're giving to your friend, and the operative word here is friend, is going to make a difference, and it's going to have your name on it as it is. You know, it's almost as if when they build that school, it's like one of the bricks in that school is symbolically going to have your name on it, whether they actually write their name on the brick or not. You're going to feel like it. You know, when you hear about that school, you're going to say, yeah, I was part of that. And that the point of that is that the reason you would do that is because it's your friend asking. It's not just some stranger asking. And also because you feel a part of it. You know, it's not just, you know, your money going out the door and bye-bye money, I hope you do some good. No, you see a point to it. And so when we talk about fundraising, we talk about fundraising. That is, it's not just about getting your hands on the money, which is important. We all need the money for our organizations. I mean, these projects we're planning, we're going to have to spend some money to pull them off, aren't we? But the other part of fundraising, which a lot of us don't know about, because, hey, before I joined CCB, I didn't go through a fundraising class, you know, is to work on building those friendships, or if you will, partnerships, so that rather than just thinking in terms of being out, hitting up, begging, scrounging, whatever you want to call it, you're actually trying to build connections with other people who are going to be a partner in your projects. And it becomes, instead of it being sort of a burden to them or a, here he comes again with his hand out, it's an opportunity. Now, there are plenty of times when they've got too much going on in their lives. You know, it's the end of the month. They've got the bills to pay, and they may have to tell you, oh, not this time, Frank, but hit me up next month after payday, you know. But the point of the matter is that part of a goal of fundraising is working, doing strategies and tasks that builds up those friendships. I'm going to relate that to another area, and that is in business. Have any of you learned, studied at all about sales in business? A little bit? Well, you've probably heard then that it's way more expensive to get a customer than to keep a customer. Y'all heard that? Same way in fundraising, right? If you have, let's call them a partner, it's easier to keep your partner than it is to go out and find new partners, right? So part of your fundraising activity isn't just figuring out projects that bring in money, as important that it is, but also think in terms of coming up with a program that builds your friends, builds your network of friends for your organization. I want to get your feedback on that. What is that making you think as we're talking about that? Yes, Margie.
Mm-hmm. One thing that's always nice, and the Lighthouse has done this with their amphitheater, is offering to your donors, you have a donor entryway where you lay bricks, and offering to put their names. Now, some may choose to be anonymous, or some may choose to do it in honor of someone, but, you know, they can do that with their donation. You know, a $50 donation gets you this, $100 gets you this, many characters. APH has done that with their Wall of Fame. Camp has done that. Seeing Eye has done that. And it's a really great way to honor people that would like to honor someone or themselves.
Yes. And, of course, that's a little easier to do if we're talking about a physical object or structure, like if we're, you know, raising money for a new building, or like at the Lighthouse for the Blind, they're building an amphitheater at their Enchanted Hills camp. And so They're getting people where they can get names on the benches on the amphitheater. But the point is that you can do that with other things. For example, let's say that you were doing a... I'm going to talk about the dining in the dark. Suppose you put together... Suppose you had menus for dining in the dark, right? They'd have to be large print and braille, of course. But let's say that as part of that menu, you were able to get people to contribute, and then they would have their names listed on the member, on the menu as partners or something like that. With T-shirts, yes. That's, which chapter was that? Fresno. So you actually got, you got donors or sponsors that you put their names, and you put their names on the T-shirt. So you had. I have to know what slogans were on your T-shirt, because a lot of people have done T-shirts and. iHeartCCB was the main thing, and then you had the list of businesses and sponsors on the T-shirt. That's. Exactly, and they get to be a partner because everybody who buys a T-shirt becomes a free billboard for them, and they're helping being a part of your organization because they're part of you. Their name is part of you. They're lending you their name, so there's a partnership there.
Building partnerships, it's also important to build a database of these partnerships.
Yes, exactly.
When I went back, I would say about 65-70% of those who donated last year donated again this year and came to the dinner. You know, so that's number one, is you keep a database of all these people, and you don't hit them up all the time. You just wait till you know that this is something that they're going to remember. I did this before. And, you know, I walked into the cupcake place this year, and I went, hey, remember last year? And she says, oh, yeah, I'll hook you up. You know, it's you have to do that. You have to, in order to keep everything nice and simple and easier the next time around, you have to keep a database.
Yes, who's Susan? Yes. I'll bring the mic over here. Yeah, here we go. There we go, Susan.
This may be leaping ahead a step, and I apologize if it is, but, you know, I've done a lot of work with people with ethnography and memoir and story writing, and when you have a story behind a project, it really excites your partners. And I think one of the neat things to do, either when you're telling your partners about your project or after they've been involved in it, is being able to come back and have a story, you know. This is the house that our Habitat for Humanity built this on Saturday, and this is what you helped do. So you bring it back and you say, you made this happen, and you tell that whole story, and each time you have a success, you have more of those stories to go out to tell your partners about and other partners. Because community is all about narrative, and narrative is all about who we are when we collaborate and when we're together. And I think that can really, you know, put the focus on the project, and the money just becomes how you get there.
That's right, and you know, and as Susan says, it's about narrative. You know, that's why when you pick up when you get those letters from, you know, around Christmas time, you get all those letters from the nonprofits. They always have a story in them, don't they? Maybe a picture. You know, they always tell you about. You know, it's not just we provided meals to 75,000 indigent residents of San Francisco County. No, it's Frank was lost his job. And he was living in his car, and he came into community services, and 3 weeks later, he had a job. Yeah, right, you know? Exactly, make it, you know? And you connect with that because it's not just a number. You know, people don't connect with numbers. Unless you're an accountant, you don't connect with numbers real well, huh? Yeah. Yes, Pam?
She runs, and she loves the mud strut. Mm-hmm. So every year, she'll say, Pam, are you guys doing the mud strut again? How can I help? And her husband is more, okay, where's the mud strut money going? Mm-hmm. And so he's more, if you find people who you fundraise in their bailiwick, mm-hmm. you're apt to get them to help more than not.
Yes. And also that illustrates how, you know, you have different approaches for different people. Like some people are more about show me the numbers or where's this money going, where other people are more about the connections. You know, it's like, I want to, you know, this is something they want to do every year. You know, they just, and being smart enough to get, being aware of targeting those different people in different ways. So if you're new to fundraising, you know, don't just think in terms of, you know, do we do a bake sale or do we do a car wash or do we do a raffle or do we do a bowl-a-thon, which are all fine, but also think in terms of not just, you know, how much money this will raise, but how will this help us build connections with others or maintain existing connections with others? And, you know, as important as the bank account is as a goal for your fundraising, it's also almost as important and sometimes more important to come away from a fundraiser with a contact list. Y'all have raffles? You know those stubs on those raffles? What do you do with them? You keep them. And you put them into a list. Hopefully, if you've got somebody who's computer savvy, you get those things into a spreadsheet. And you make a note of, you know, so you record, you know, who they are, how to contact them, what they donated, when. And, of course, that also helps you give those thank you notes because, yeah, as much as possible, you want to thank them when they do that. That's part of building the, it's not just good manners, but it also builds the relationship. You know, it's not like, you know, one of the reasons that we hate giving money to homeless people is because, what, they hit us up once and they're gone, right? You know, we're, suppose, though, that the next week you walk by that same guy and he said, hey, mister, thanks for buying me lunch. And I really was really hungry that day. How you doing? You might actually give him some more money the next time because he actually thanked you, right? No, really. Am I kidding you? No? Yeah, you know? And exactly. And the other thing is that helps you make plans for building friendships. For example, suppose that you realize that Jim Smith has been consistently donating $50 to your group every 5 years. Well, not every 5 years, but every year. Every year he's there. You might want to think about looking at the people who donate pretty regularly and thinking, what could I do, since these people obviously are buying into what we're doing because they're regulars, what can we do to strengthen that relationship with them? Is it, you know, maybe this might be somebody that you might actually want to approach about being a member or being a volunteer for your group or increasing the depth of their connection somehow. You know, it's like in business they talk about upselling. You ever heard that term, upselling? That's when you call customer service and they're trying to then sell you a credit card. You know, that's upselling, they call it. So, but you do something like that with your fundraising, and you can't do that if you haven't kept track of who's who, right? If you're throwing away those cards, I mean those raffle things every time, you're back at square one, right? So, in your fundraising, then not only come up with projects for fundraising, but also figure out how that can build up your networks of friends and see how it can build up partnerships. And after all, there are other ways to contribute than money. You know, like if there are groups that like to, you know, if there are people that may not never ever be able to give you money, but they're always there when you want to do your car wash. They're always there. They always bring the soap or they always have the buckets for you or they always let you use their parking lot. That's a contribution too, and that's part of the connection. Yep, you got your regulars. Absolutely, show appreciation. That goes beyond the thank you notes, of course, because for those that are more committed, they deserve more than just the thank you note. And at the Lighthouse for the Blind recently, they just did a big. They did a big volunteer appreciation day, and it happened to be the same day as the Mutt Strut, so I couldn't go. But they did a big volunteer appreciation party that they do every year. And yes. Yes, I'm. Oh, okay. Just a moment. Yes. And did you come in since we started?
No. Michelle. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Michelle Burnett from the Greater Lakewood chapter.
Oh, the Greater Lakewood is here.
Welcome. And go ahead.
Tanya. I put on a family reunion. It was just four family members who were our committee. And it's me, my mother, and two sisters. And we had 200, and we were expecting 250 people. And we did a pretty good job. And our family root name was Coward Family. And we were in Georgia, and they had Chick-fil-A. Their mascot is a cow. I went to the local Chick-fil-A and asked, could we have the cow out for the children's events? And maybe some percentage off coupons and everything. And the manager was really helpful. He sent the cow out, he said, and we made him a Coward Family T-shirt. And we also made a little picture, you know, we put it in a frame, a T-shirt, and we said thank you from the Coward Family, and we put honorary member on the top of the and they put the picture up with the that they were an honorary coward with the T-shirt, and we put little pictures of the children with the cow and everything, and we were up in their store for a good 2 months.
Oh, that's great!
At honorary membership, I think people like that. They actually don't have to do anything, but they're members.
Yes, that is great. Oh, that is cool. So keep that in mind when you're planning a fundraiser. Think of how you can include that so that if you have a choice of doing a raffle, I know it's harder work to have the name on the raffle than just doing the 50-50. I know it. But there may but factor that in as the benefit of being able to collect that information. Or factor in when you're making your plan for a fundraiser, you know, make sure you include planning for who's going to write the thank you notes. Or if we have regular donors, can we do something special for them? Like, you know, maybe they get to sit at the head table at the fundraiser banquet. Or maybe if you've got a fundraiser where you got tickets to the ball game, they get the really good seats, whatever. You know, and incorporate that into your plan. Go ahead. Michael, yes.
First time CCB attendee. Haven't found the chapter yet, but I'm just, you know, just investigating in Torrance, California.
You live in Torrance, is there? For you Southern Californians down here, is there a chapter near Torrance? Greater Long Beach or Greater LA?
Okay.
So, and if you don't find one of those folks here from those chapters this weekend, call the CCB office and they'll get you the contact information. Or if you look on our website, we've got the contact information for the chapters there. So,
in addition to asking friends and family and all those people, I found that businesses really love to give to an organization that's really doing something positive because it looks good in the community that they're helping. So it's like, don't ever be afraid to approach business owners. I mean, talk to them as though you would talk to a friend, and I think they will be very helpful to all of us that are fundraising.
Excellent. I want to tell you a little story about that in terms of reaching out to a business. We had a great experience this weekend with that, the Guide Dog Users of California. The chair of our fundraising committee happens to be somebody who has been involved very actively in the guide dog service dog community for many, many years, and she's very well connected with companies. And so she made contact with some of her company contacts in order to get products for us to sell at our GDUC booth this weekend. She got us 7 big boxes of dog stuff. So if you have been by in the exhibits today, you have seen that there was this table full of dog toys and we were able to sell them inexpensively because we had so much, and it was what a great win. And that was about relationships. If she hadn't had those relationships, we weren't going anywhere with that, right? See how important that is? And you can do that. Oh, another clue too is that Companies like to give product. Do you know why? Two reasons. One is, of course, if they've got some extra inventory, they can get rid of it, right? But the other reason is that, you know, when you're in a company, you always have to manage your cash, right? You have to make sure you've got enough cash on hand to pay that next bill, pay that payroll. So if they give you product instead of cash, they're not running down their cash. And here's the other thing, is that if the company gives you its product as a donation, they get to write that off on their taxes at retail. So let's say that they have make products for 50 cents a piece, right? And let's say that the product normally sells for a dollar, right? So let's say that they give you the amount of product that would have cost them $50 to make, right? So let's say, you know, 50 cents a piece, that's 100 products, right? But since it sells for a dollar, they would have earned $100 if they sold it, right? Only cost them $50 to make. They're able to claim it on their expense on taxes as $100 instead of $50. So they get a tax benefit. You get product that you can use for whether it's part of yours, using your fundraiser, something to sell, something to donate, whatever you do with it. And so they benefit by donating to you product instead of cash. So never, never look down on the idea of getting product instead of cash from a donor, because it's very useful. And a lot of people don't know that about how businesses write off product, you know, that it's a benefit to them to do that. So I'm checking my time to see if we're still on track on time here. Just, we got a conversation over there. I don't want to miss it. Am I missing something over here? No. So it's just after 3. We're doing well on time. And I want to ask, because we have a fair amount of experience in the room with people who've done different fundraiser, are there some experiences you've had with your fundraisers or lessons you've learned from being involved in fundraising that maybe you haven't heard brought up yet? Because I want us to all share from our collective experiences in here. Yes. Zach. Where's Zach? Over here on the side here?
Over here.
Is Zach over here? There's Zach.
So I'm an Eagle Scout. Recently just got my Eagle Scout. And thank you. Thank you. For my Eagle Scout project, Junior Blind, does everybody know what Goal Ball is in here?
Yep.
Okay, so, you know, there's no manufacturer out there who makes the goals. It's made of PVC, polyvinyl chloride, the piping that goes in underground that brings the water into our house.
Yeah.
So they assigned me to make the goals. They had no funds, nothing whatsoever. It was from Eagle Project. Mm-hmm. I had to go to the Junior Blind and measure the goals of what we could. A lot of them were kind of glued together, and a lot of it was, they were funky. So, you know, it was hard to measure. So in between that and using certain guidelines off the web, I used the official, I forgot what it was, Goal Ball, the official Goal Ball site. I used their official measurements, and I had to fundraise, and it was, being a Boy Scout in L.A., you know, going around places in your uniform, and then, you know, really saying, you're part, I told them, you know, I'm legally blind here, this place has done so much for me, my opportunity to give back, you know, if, really when it comes down to fundraising for that project, you know, when you bring the blind, and you bring in scouting, and you bring in two different organizations, they want to donate. And it was an amazing thing. Fundraising is a lot of work, you know, don't get me wrong. But if you have the will, and you're confident, and you go directly into that person with a letter of recommendation, and, you know, you got to sound really positive, you know, and sound like, I mean, don't sound like, oh, it's okay if you don't want to donate. Don't even say that. You know, just say, I'm looking for donations. Here's my letter of recommendation. And, you know, explain it. So the Junior Blind recently got two new goals for their Goal Ball that are portable that I think are going in between Junior Blind and Clamp Bloomfield as we speak. So.
All right. That is cool. other thoughts on fundraising ideas? Is that William? Okay.
Thank you. William Elliott, Fresno chapter. One of the things when we did our first Dining in the Dark, we told the people who bought the tickets what we planned to do. We wanted to help local youth in our blind youth in our area. And then after we'd collected the money, we donated some of the money to send a group of children to the Junior Blind Olympics. We had a competition, essay competition, for an iPad, given a mini iPad to, and we also sponsored an Easter egg hunt. But the problem with that was, I don't think we actually followed through in publicising it. We as a chapter know we did that, but nobody else does. Yeah, but the general community outside. So report what you do and tell everyone.
Yes. All these different tasks work together. Who's that? Michelle. Okay, here we go.
One of the things that the Greater Lakewood chapter has done is we partnered with the Blinded Vets Association. And in doing so, we started selling bed sheets. It's been about a year. And we get to split the profits. Bed sheets, literal bed sheets, full, you know, and they are very good quality. And so we split. It works out so much better when you're not alone doing things. And it's work, but it's a good work because we also include our vets and they also include us in the things that they do in their things. So it's, we've got a partnership going and it's terrific.
And there you go, the partners. And by the way, partnering is important for another reason, and that is when we talk about grants, you know, sometimes when we talk about CCB financial situation and you'll hear somebody say, well, you people need to be going out and getting grants. Let me tell you something about grants, okay? Grant writing is hard. But more important, I think that there are a lot of people that don't quite understand what grants are and what foundations are. Basically, a foundation is a pot of money that somebody coughed up because they decided that they want to use this money. Very good timing, thank you. They wanted to use this money to do something that they care about. Operative word there is they. And these different foundations have the priorities that are set by the people either who started them or the people who run them, depending on the situation. And what they're looking for is they're not really looking to give their money away to charity, per se, in the way that you might think of it. They're thinking more in terms of finding partners to push towards the goals they're working on. And each foundation has its own set of goals. So some foundations are really into, you know, funding things that will help the environment, say. Some foundations might be supporting projects that help a particular religious denomination. Some might be really focused on kids and education. Some might be focused more on homelessness or hunger or third world poverty. And so when you think in your organization, and a lot of you, your chapters may not be to that point yet by any means, but when you think of reaching out, especially to more like institutional type of potential donors, think about what is their cause? What is their mission? And ask yourself, how can we approach them in a way that makes us partners in their mission while they're becoming partners in our mission, and can we align those missions? So, for example, let's say that you wanted to get a grant from a particular retailer, and let's say that they're a retailer that happens to donate a lot of money for schools. You know, maybe they donate school supplies or something like that. Well, that means probably that if you were to come to them with a project that has had to do with raising money for blind kids, you'd have a lot more success than if you were trying to raise money for blind seniors. Or by the same token, if you went to an organization that was focused on recreation, let's say like one of these outdoor stores like REI or North Face or something, let's say, you know, they're about outdoors and sports and the outdoor lifestyle and promoting health and fitness. Well, if you have a project, let's say that a group that's involved with the United States Association of Blind Athletes is probably going to have a lot more success hitting them up for some donations, say, than a book readers group. And I love to read, but you see what I'm saying there. So when you think of, to the extent that you can get a sense of what potential donors care about, try to focus on donors that are going to align with your goals and have goals that so that instead of, again, just begging, you're working on a partnership. You're working together. And I think that as your fundraising grows, that's more important. You know, if you're selling raffle tickets, I don't think it's all that important whether for a person buying a raffle ticket whether, you know, you're aligned exactly with their mission. Let's say, like, you know, if you've got a guy who's got, you know, he's got a family and three kids and he's mostly concerned about schools and Little League and stuff like that. Well, even if you're not a school in Little League, he might still give you $5 for raffle tickets because he thinks that possibly winning that weekend in Tahoe might be worth it whether he really cares about your group or not. But if you're going to, again, like I said, if you're going to a store and you're hoping to get a big donation from the store to help you with your big fundraiser, if the store is totally off in terms of their role in helping the community, is on a total tangent that has nothing to do with what you were doing, you may have a problem. But if you can show them where what we're doing ties into what they're doing, then you can get some traction. And that's something that a lot of people don't know. And it's, again, when you hear somebody say, just go get a grant, the main thing is that there's a lot of research. There's a lot of research involved in finding the right place to look for grants. Each grant provider has a different application you have to fill out, different requirements they have. There are classes you can take on grant writing. I'm going to, for those of you that have either Learning Ally or Bookshare, they have a lot of good books on those those particular providers on fundraising. And there's an organization, I think it's based in New York City, it's called the Foundation Center. And its purpose is to educate the public or nonprofits about foundations and nonprofit fundraising, and they have libraries in various places around the country. And fortunately, we happen to have one of their libraries in San Francisco. So, when I was had more time on my hands than I have now, I used to attend some of their free classes at their library, and I learned a lot from that. And I know that there is a similar organization here in Sacramento. I believe that the Foundation Center has a library down in the Los Angeles area. You might want to see if one of those organizations of that type, that provide information about nonprofits, is in your area, and if they offer free classes. There are also a lot of community colleges and other colleges that offer classes on nonprofit items where you can learn some things about that. And one of my goals as I build up our leadership library that I talked about is I'm hoping that I'll find the time to put together a bibliography of some good books that you can read to learn more about these topics, on like fundraising especially is one where there's a lot to learn. Yes, Zach again? Yeah, okay.
I just wanted to say about fundraising. If there is a main office to go into and it's convenient, go in there with a letter of recommendation. I've always, you know, I've always thought to myself, they want to see your personality. You, if you can go in there with a letter of recommendation, proof that you need it, you know, my honest belief is people like seeing, you know, the personality of the people that they're going to donate to. So it's really the person that you are. If you go in there with your with a positive attitude towards the fundraiser, they're going to, you know, most likely want to donate. I've always said physical appearance will get it.
And that personal contact. Exactly. You know, that's another, when we go back to that somebody hitting you up for money, one of the problems you're not very sympathetic to them is because they don't know you from Adam. You don't know them from Adam, you know? There's no connection there.
Yes, go ahead. Okay, also, whenever you're thinking of an event or doing any fundraising, think about what your town or what your city is really into. Like my city, for instance, you know, we like country music, you know, we're country people, you know, small town. And so, you know, we can use those angles to reach those people to want to donate because they're like, hey, they're just like us. And then in turn, they tend to be more giving and things like that. So it's always good to look for that and see what your city is really into and try to build your theme around that.
Indeed. Yes, who's that? You can start, and I'll go ahead and start, and I'll wander towards you as we're going on here. So go ahead.
One thing I'm hearing is when you're looking for funding, know your target audience. But also, when you on the other end, when you're selling, also know your target audience, because if you have dog products and you're going to a senior center where there isn't even a little mouse or a goldfish, you're not going to raise very many funds. So, you know, you want to address your target audience, maybe know both going and coming when you're doing your fundraising, who you're asking for it from and who you're going to sell it to.
One of the things I'm aware of, having been around this organization for way too long, before grass turned brown and turned green again, is one of the challenges we have with our chapters is we do too much internal fundraising, trying to get money from our members. And we have to, if we're going to be successful in fundraising, we really got to reach out to the public, kind of like the Dining in the Dark, I presume, reaches out way beyond its own membership. And I think that's just something that we really need to keep in mind, is reach out to our friends, our families, the public, et cetera.
Yes, we do. And, of course, that's the driving motivation behind the CCB Mutt Strut, is putting on an event that appeals to people outside of our membership and outside of the blind community. So that's exactly what's motivating the idea behind that. So I'm going to make one last comment, is that just as I encouraged you when we finished up talking about the projects to go back to your membership and your board and your chapter and brainstorm some project ideas. Brainstorm ideas for a project that would suit the character of your particular chapter. I also would encourage you to go back to your leadership in your chapter and start working on a fundraising plan. You know, think in terms of what are our strengths individually and collectively in our chapter. You know, different people have different kinds of chapters, right? They have different kinds of strengths, different kinds of weaknesses. And talk about what are our strengths in terms of talents we have in the group, maybe connections we have in the community, activities, you know, skills we have, activities. And how can we then use those in fundraising. And we think about ideas for fundraising. You think, what ideas for fundraising utilize our skills? You know, for example, if you have people who like to sell, then something like a raffle might be great because they're very happy going around selling raffle tickets, right? On the other hand, if you've got people who really would prefer doing things with their hands, then maybe you'd want to get a bunch of people like, you know, making crafts and then doing going to a crafts fair and selling stuff because it would fit more with the talents and the preferences of your members. And think in your plan, think, how is this project going to make friends for us, get us out in the community, as opposed to just making some dollars? And think about that, you know, so that this fundraising isn't just in its own little box, you know, scrounging up money, but it's actually part of the process of integrating your chapter into the community and us as blind people as well. And that can be done better with a plan, a long-term plan. Yes. Who's that? Wea. Okay, I'm going to come around. Where are you at, Wea? I'm reaching around there. You didn't need your head, did you?
Hi, I'm Wea. The first thing I usually do when I'm raising money for anything is that I take out my wallet and I put my own money in there because no one's going to, like, listen to what you have to say if you have an empty container walking around. They're going to be like, oh, nobody's donating. Why should I?
Exactly. And by the way, that's another thing to know about the psychology of donors is that donors don't donate to need. They donate to success. So when you're doing your fundraising plan, do it based on what highlights your success, as opposed to, we don't have any money and we can't do anything, so please give us some money. Instead, more like, yeah, tickets are selling fast, or we've had this student education access grant for more than 10 years, and we've given away over $25,000, and we are so excited to have you be a partner with us in this project. See the difference? Yes, exactly. Well, now we're going to talk about our last topic, and this is another big one. Big issue for us all is growing our membership. You know, if, you know, it's been said that either you're moving forward or you're moving backward, you're not standing still. And if your chapter feels like it's moving backward, what can we do to make it move forward, especially when that involves getting new blood into the chapter? I have a few observations that I've been exposed to over the years on this. One was a number of years ago, I was at a leadership training, and we had a consultant come in, and part of his presentation was about membership. And he said a statistic that at the time I thought was kind of nuts until I was going to think about it. He was saying that on average, you should have a turnover of a third of your membership in any given year. Does that sound nuts, a third of your membership turning over? It does. But there's actually a logic to it. Think about this. Think of how many organizations you belong to. Maybe you belong to a church, maybe you belong to a synagogue, a mosque, or whatever. Maybe you belong to a book club, maybe you belong to an alumni association, you belong to a CCB chapter, you would belong to a special interest group, you belong to a sports group. So let's say that if you were to take just the groups that you belong to yourself, you know, it might be a dozen groups, right? How many of those groups do you put a lot of time into each week? Do you put a lot of time into every one of those groups? Nope. You got priorities. And how often do you figure that one or two of those groups just lapse because you've got other things going on? You know what? Maybe one or two a year, you're just kind of like, I don't have time for this anymore. Nothing wrong with the group, but you're just doing other stuff, right? You know, there was a while there for a couple of years, I was very active in the Lions Club. It was great. I thoroughly recommend the Lions Club for anybody who wants to find a group to join. I'm not a lion now. Is that because there's something wrong with the Lions Club? No. I'm just doing some other stuff right now. Hopefully in the future, I'll free up my time and I'll be able to get back to the Lions Club, but I'm not right now. So when you think about it in those terms, it's not so surprising that you can expect some turnover in your organization. And some turnover doesn't necessarily mean there's anything wrong with your organization. In fact, if you're not getting any turnover in your organization, that may be a red flag. You know, if you've got the same 20 people that have been part of your group for about 20 years, you got a problem. On the other hand, if about 18 of those people haven't been there for more than 6 months, that's a problem. So just as a rule of thumb, when you think in terms of an indicator of whether you need to make a change in whatever your chapter is doing to obtain or retain members, if less than a third of your chapter members have been there, you know, in other words, if you don't have, if less than a third of your chapter members are not new within the last year, then you probably need to step up your member recruitment activities just a bit. Now, that'll vary because, for example, if you're in a church congregation, that may not change its turnover so fast. We hope, right? Yeah, we had 50 people change their religion last year, okay? On the other hand, if you're a bowling team and you haven't had any new bowlers for about the last 20 years, you got a problem, right? So part of it depends on the group, but let's say a third. On the other hand, if you've got more than a third of your membership new in the last year, then you have to kind of wonder, what happened? Was there a fight that drew you that a lot of people quit? What happened? You know. So just as a rule of thumb, look at your membership list, and if you've got about a third turnover in a given year, you're probably doing things about right. If you've got less than a third turnover, you probably need to step up your membership. And if you've got more than about a third turnover in your membership list in a given year, you probably need to work a little harder at retaining members. For example, especially in our special interest affiliates, because people are not always connected to each other because we don't have monthly meetings, it can be hard to retain those memberships. So there's a need then to keep reaching out to past members and kind of keep them in the fold. And so just keep that number in mind as a balance in terms of where your priority is in membership. Another thing about membership, and this is why I put it last, was that membership development has a lot to do with those other things we already talked about. And in fact, all three of these things fit together. Projects give your chapter a purpose. Having a purpose makes it easy for you to attract members, because if somebody, a potential member, says, what do you do? Why should I join? You can say, this is what we do. This is what we're about. Also, if you want to approach people to be financial partners with you, it's easier to say, this is what we do. This is why we want you to be a partner. Open your checkbook. Thank you. They all fit together. Membership. Who would like to share something about what their chapter or their group has done in terms of either reaching out to new members or retaining past members?
And what I was talking about earlier is there are one or two people standing at the door to greet people as they come in. Mm-hmm. And that's whether you're old or new, you know, because basically everybody just kind of sits on their can and talks to whoever, you know, they usually talk to. There's not a lot of, you know, there's a lot of little cliques, or yeah, there's a lot of, you know, people don't speak to anybody that they haven't met before.
We should do shuffle seating. I just thought of that.
Shuffle seating. Move people around. Yeah. Just shake up the pot. Yeah. But definitely make your try to make a conscious decision at the leadership level to make your chapter a warmer, friendlier, more welcoming place. Whether that's having a greeter who makes sure that you know, whenever somebody comes in, that they're immediately picked, grabbed by somebody and saying, "Hi, I'm Bob. Welcome to the group. Where you want to need some coffee?" You know, or moving people around, maybe playing some get acquainted games during your meetings, or getting a phone tree. You know, a lot of chapters that are successful chapters do that, where they have a phone tree where four or five people divide up the work of calling their members every month so they stay connected.
Yeah, you don't just say, you know, we're having a meeting Saturday, bye. You know, you say, oh, well, you know, how are things? Or, you know, I mean, just basically.
Really connect.
Right.
Really connect.
Connect. How is your daughter? You know, how is your, mm-hmm. you know, whatever is,
yeah.
how is he doing? You know, whatever.
Yeah.
Show, you know, just one little item that you can connect with someone.
Yes.
Right?
Is that Susan?
It's Susan, yeah.
Yes.
One of the things that we do, and this was actually something you recommended, and a number of us have in our chapter do it, is I'll be sitting in the blind center in an outreach car, and I'll meet someone, and it turns out they're visually impaired, and they don't know about our chapter, so, you know, I tell them about it, I invite them, I write down email and phone number, and then I try to call that person the very same day or the next day and just say, hey, I'm the person that was chewing your ear off in the lobby the other day. I just wanted to check in and tell you that this is happening, and it works. It actually really does, and, you know, you often meet new members when you're out doing other things in your life. My girlfriend Bev was over at a rummage sale, a garage sale, and she met someone who had just moved to town from Australia, and that woman is now a member. So it's just being open to people, but then the follow-through is the real key part, is calling up and keeping that going.
Mm-hmm. And I think Pam was wanting the... Nancy, I'm coming. Okay, Nancy, I'm coming. Yeah. Here I come, Nancy. By the way, while I'm walking over, I want to make a comment that, of course, a lot of when we get on these discussions of membership, a lot of us talk about the importance of reaching out to young people. And that is important. But I want to give you a statistic that a lot of people forget, is that most people who are visually impaired are older. That doesn't mean you should ignore the kids. But if you really want to reach out to the whole community, you need to look in another direction. You know, a lot of us kind of have a skewed view to that is because especially I think those of us who are of our age group, more or less, grew up in that whole post-war ROP generation where there was this huge cohort of people born, say, during the front end of the baby boom. So a lot of us grew up, especially those who went to schools for the blind or were in resource rooms, where we grew up in these tight, blind, young communities where there were young people all around us. And we're aging, and now we're scared because, like, we're all the young people. Well, there are a lot of the young people, but a lot of it is that the people aren't so young. And it's not because the community is in trouble, but because that's the real demographic of blindness. You know, this ROP thing was kind of a blip. You know, it's kind of a statistical blip where you had this medical technology that caused this blindness, and so there was this blip in the stats. That's true. It is coming. It is back. But still, most blind people are seniors, and you want to keep that in mind when you do your planning. Not that you should go give up on kids, but don't think that's the only answer. Let me get Nancy, and then Nancy, here I am. Okay. Yeah.
I hope this is important, but my idea is that there should be an interesting and varied agenda. And that members of the chapter should have some feedback before the agenda is sent out as to what should be on the agenda. And I don't see that happening in our chapter yet. I think it will now. But and I also think people should have reasons. We should give people reasons why they should be members, like we're advocating for one another to help improve our lives. And that each person is, like Debbie said, there's a phone tree. Make people feel as if they're valuable as a person and as a member of as a whole.
Margie's next, and then the gentleman on the other side, I'll come around to. I will. We're going to bounce all around here. I'm getting my exercise. I love it. It's a good thing that cake was really good for lunch. I need the exercise.
Ooh, you could have had mine. I have a couple of things. If you guys were in the general session yesterday, you would have heard about the DR talk and services to the elderly. And that is so important that we, as an organization, actively begin reaching out and providing peer support, peer mentorship. And, you know, there's macular degeneration groups, which are great. They have a lot of people. There's fighting blindness. But they don't do a lot of peer support in terms of people who've been blind all their lives and know how to do things, or people who's worked in the blindness field and knows how to do things. So that's one comment. Now I've got a couple questions about membership. What do you do? Well, I want to make one comment, a pro about membership. The pro is have speakers. Have people speak that people are interested in. And it may not be blindness stuff. I mean, our chapter is really into the historical stuff. The challenge is, I want to know, when you have a chapter that's been around for eons and a lot of old curmudgeons in it, and they aren't going to move around, they aren't going to play any get-to-know-each-other games, everybody sits at their own little table, and it's a little difficult when we have a visitor come. There's a few of us, but how do you address those things in a chapter? Because I think that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, that is a hard one. And I will tell you, I don't have an immediate answer to that because I know that the chair shuffle. It is tough. You get those. And even that falls into the hole that there are certain cultures that build up in a chapter that don't make themselves open to new members. I think that's a whole topic. And in fact, Margie, if you write me an email, maybe I'll put that on the agenda as one of the items to cover next year, get a seminar just on addressing the culture in a chapter in those ways. I think that would be a very valuable seminar topic in itself. The gentleman around the corner here. And by the way, tell us your name again. Dave. Yes. Oh, Dane. Okay, there we go, Dane.
Okay, so some of my suggestions are to not only bring in new members, but maybe to motivate them is, you know, you can reach out to a lot of the independent living centers. They have them all over the state of California. And what it is that a lot of those centers offer free services to people with all types of disabilities, and that's a great place to, you know, put your information out there and maybe do a talk on your chapter and on what CCB does and bring people in that way. And then also another good resource is to reach out to your local high school district, like with your VI teachers, and really get them involved, because a lot of the students that are coming out of high school, you know, would be a great asset to your chapter, so that you can get some more, you know, younger people's ideas, you know, because a lot of times the younger people, the younger generation, they have, you know, they think out of the box a lot of the time, so.
Okay, and I'm coming back around here.
One is not related to my CCB chapter, but I used to have a group that we did kind of like a Sunday school group with, and every fourth Sunday, they put me in charge. And so I partnered people up. You got 5 minutes to get to know one another, and I would make sure that I have a younger person with an older person, or I mix them up, and I don't let the same people hang out together. And there was always a prize at the end of the day. When it's time to introduce everybody, you can't introduce yourself. You have to introduce your partner. And the one who had the best introduction of their partner would win a prize. And then the following week, the first thing we do is, what did you learn? What else did you learn about the partner you had last month? And then if you could tell something, you know you got something. But that way you get to know more people so that you can get more prize. And but the other thing is that is related to CCB. I had a person who didn't get to be the officer that they wanted to be. And so she didn't come to the meeting. And when I met up with her and I told her I missed her, and she says, "Well, I didn't get to be what I wanted to be, so I'm not going to come." And I'm like,
Wow. Is that what all you had to offer was your title? I was really looking forward to working with you and trying to pick your brain because I know you have a lot of good ideas. And I just kind of stroked her ego to get her to come back. And so that, you know, I really want her involved. And that's another way to get some of the older people, that I'm going to try to get some of the older people and try to keep some of the older people in my chapter, is reach to, because I know it, when I lost my vision, I lost my identity. And when my mom got older and had to retire, she lost part of her identity and didn't know where she fit in. If I can make them fit in and give them a purpose in our chapter and kind of look, you know, even if I listen to a whole bunch of stories and a whole bunch of nonsense, I'm just going to listen. And then that way, so they can feel a part. And make sure I keep them a part of my chapter.
Thank you. I want to throw in another observation here, and that is, and some of you may have heard me talk about this before, but when you listen to blindness statistics in this country about how many blind and visually impaired people there are, you'll notice in a hurry that those figures are all over the map. You know, I've heard like 1.2 million blind people in the country. I've heard people quote figures as far as like 20, 25 million people that are seriously visually impaired. It's hard to get the straight figure on what they've come down to, because part of that is we don't know, when we use that term blind, it depends how you define it. Are you talking about people who don't see anything? Are you talking about people who are legally blind? Are you talking about people who are just significantly enough bit visually impaired that they can't drive, say? So it's hard, depending on who you talk to get the straight figure on how many blind people there are in the country or in your area. But as I've listened to those figures over the year, I've sort of boiled it down to a rule of thumb that seems to work. If you have 1,000 people, you know, think of a large hall, say, 1,000 people, right? You can pretty much be sure that, assuming that it's a reasonably random sampling of people, two of those folks in that room are totally blind. You know, that's whether you're in a big city like Los Angeles or you're talking about, you know, a smaller town like Merced, wherever you are, you can pretty much be assured that two out of those 1,000 are going to be totally blind. And you can assume that 20 out of those 1,000 are either totally blind or visually impaired. So that means two out of every 100. In other words, you take 100 people, say the number of people in a restaurant, right? Two of those people in that restaurant you just went into, assuming we're not at a convention, of course, are visually impaired. In other words, wherever you are, sometimes people think, I can't grow my chapter, there are no blind people around here. Yes, there are. We just haven't found them yet. So be aware of that. They're there. And no, they're not all in that other organization. Those guys claim they have 50,000 members, something they've claimed for about 30 years. But anyway, that's 50,000 members out of 1.5 million, 25 million. I think we've got room for growth here. And the people are around us. So don't let yourself be discouraged by thinking there are no other blind people around in my community, because they're there. And yes, is that Pam? Okay, here I come. It's better than she saying, don't go there.
Here we are. One of the things that, and I have to give my president, our chapter president, his kudos, and even though I'm married to him, I'm still going to give them to him. He is a very social person. So we have members that are ill. So he makes sure that once a month he calls these people and he talks to them and he sees how he's doing. And he even goes over sometimes and he picks up their dues for the year, because even though they don't come to the meetings, they still want to be members and they want to find out what's going on. And so that's how, and he's very good at talking. I told you guys, he can talk to a rock. He's very good at getting people to feel very comfortable. So one of the things he's wanting to start to do is something similar, is to have once a month, have one new person go around the room and greet the whole chapter. Last month, we ended up with 26 people at our chapter meeting. We have 22 members in our chapter. We had no speaker. But for some reason, we ended up with almost 30 members of CCB at our chapter meeting. And all we were talking about was our fundraiser. But Ken is the type of person who can draw people in. And he's very good at it. And we have members in the chapter who are very good at it. And we all have our own bailiwick, and we need to focus on each of our own bailiwick, and we can pull. We all pull members in one way or another. We just don't realize we do it.
Yes, who's that? Darcy, okay. Coming back around here. Squeak so I can find you. I'm getting close. I'm almost there. I'm almost there. Well, maybe I need the exercise. Here we are.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that to share a little bit about our story, just because it's relevant to what you're talking about with new members. William went blind about 5 years ago, and I'm his wife. I'm sighted. But when that happened to us, and I say us because it happened to us, I had no idea how to help him. We lived in a fairly small town at the time, and he felt completely alone, and I did not know how to help him. And it was quite a while till we finally found someone. We actually went on vacation to San Francisco to the Lighthouse for the Blind, and they said, you need to be around blind people. You need to learn how to be blind. You need to know what your resources are. You need to know. And she said, I think there's a CCB chapter in Fresno. But it took 5 years for us to even know that this was out there. And we had made contacts with the DOR. We had talked to people at hospitals, and nobody ever mentioned it. And one of the things I'd like to see us do in Fresno is to put our information everywhere, every hospital, every eye clinic, the VA hospital, senior center. They need to know that we exist, whether they choose to use the service or not. But for us, we didn't. We didn't know for the longest time. Yeah, and once we knew, hey, you're blind. Welcome. But once he learned that these people existed, right, and that was part of his talk at the Dining in the Dark, it changed everything, his whole perspective and mine too, obviously, because we're together. So every chapter should be thinking about how do you get your information to everybody in your community.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's a family thing. It's not just a person that it happens to. It happens to families. Mm-hmm.
That's right. Which means that when we talk about those figures of people that we can reach out to, it's not just the 2 out of every 1,000 or 2 out of every 100, but it's the families of those 2 out of every 1,000 and those 2 out of every 100. So there's lots of people to reach out to, and there are more every day, and they need us, and we can help in a big way. And if you're looking for an idea for a chapter project, that's a great one right there, is to find something that addresses that. That would be so cool. There's a lot of great resources to help you in the areas that we've talked about today. One reason I'm running around getting email addresses and phone numbers and stuff today is because I'm going to start sending out information that I have, and as I get more, I'll send more. There's usually the American Council of the Blind has a membership committee, as does the California Council of the Blind. And the ACB's membership committee usually has a monthly membership phone call where people share ideas about different membership topics. And those are usually announced ahead of time. So if you're not receiving the weekly California Connection, whether that's by calling the CCB office over the weekend and listening to the recording, or better yet, getting it by email because it's longer, make sure you're doing that, because you'll probably see the announcements about these kind of membership phone calls there. And also, if you're reading the ACB's monthly magazine, the Braille Forum, they often put a report on what they talked about at those membership calls as articles in the Braille Forum. And we often have things like that in our Blind Californian magazine as well. So there's some great resources. And again, I'm looking forward to sharing with you more resources. And I hope that this conversation this afternoon has been helpful to everybody. I thought it would be a good idea for us to get away from more of sort of a lecture format to more of a discussion format. I think we've had that today, and I've been really enjoying. So most of you here today have been just sharing great ideas, and it's been very creative, and I think that's wonderful. I hope all of you are going away today with something that a new idea that you can take back to your chapters, and maybe quite a few new ideas. And my plan is that we will have a leadership track session at every convention from now on. If you have ideas for sessions you'd like to see, definitely let me know about that. Margie, the issue you raised about just how to deal with sort of, you might say, a lethargic culture in your chapter, how to deal with that, that's definitely on the short list of things to talk about at a future session. So if any of you have ideas, let me give you how you can contact me. First off, again, I'm Frank Welty, and I'm going to spell that for you. Frank is F-R-A-N-K. Welty is W-E-L-T. That's like telephone E. So it's Welty, spelled with an E, not a Y, Welty. And my email address is frank.a.welty@gmail.com. My cell number is 510-541-1442. And I'm looking forward to sharing ideas with you, sharing resources. And let's keep in touch. Let's share ideas with each other. If you're on the CCB president's list, that's a great place to raise questions and bring up ideas so that you can share them with chapter leaders all around the state. And does anybody have any final comments before we finish up here? Yes. Yes, Michelle, I'm coming over. Okay, am I getting close here? Here we are.
Oh, this is Tanya, but I'll
have to. Okay, there you go.
I just wanted to say, remind us all that we are our own best advocates for CCB. When we give off vibes that are positive and we show what we are all about, then people want to ask and they want to join. And I just want to emphasize that point.
Anybody else? All right, we're almost at 4:00. And again, thanks for everybody who came today and who participated. It's been a very creative session. We'll come back and do it again, hopefully next April. And we'll know more about that tomorrow at our board meeting. And you will be hearing from me. Have a good afternoon. Thanks.